Let us read the scriptures together. The reading today is from Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 7, 1 to 14. The title of the sermon is The Crooked Lines of God. The Crooked Lines of God. This is a passage that's puzzling, but I think we will see the goodness and the sovereignty of God in it. Verse 1 of chapter 7, Ecclesiastes. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For this is the end of everyone, and the living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of countenance the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. This also is vanity. Surely oppression makes the wise foolish, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Better is the end of a thing than its beginning. The patient in spirit are better than the proud in spirit. Do not be quick to anger, for anger lodges in the bosom of fools. Do not say, "Why were the former days better than these?" For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Wisdom is as good as an inheritance, an advantage to those who see the sun. For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money. And the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to the one who possesses it. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. And in the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other, so that mortals may not find out anything that will come after them. The focus of our time together today, I better set my stopwatch. The focus of our time together is on Ecclesiastes 7:13. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? The first time I read this verse, it really gripped me, in part because it reminded me of the lines in the works of one of my favorite poets, William Everson, who wrote in the front of one of his books, "God writes straight with crooked lines." God writes straight with crooked lines. Right now, everything feels a little bit crooked to me, because I just arrived from Indonesia, and really, Berkeley is very strange. Indonesia is normal, but Berkeley is really unusual. Everything is so familiar because I lived here for 17 years. I've lived in Indonesia 18 years. And First Press is my home. I feel a certain part of me that I've come home. I love Berkeley. I love this church. But I suspect that though everything looks the same, everything's really different. Because I haven't lived through what you all have lived here in Berkeley. I've had a completely different experience of life. I've seen the world from a totally different angle. And I don't know what's been going on here. Occasionally I read the New York Times, but I don't think it's the same. In Indonesia, I'm the director of the Indonesian Consortium for Religious Studies. And I teach mainly Muslims in a university, in a secular university, but also in a Muslim university and a Christian university. And I live in a Muslim village. And I'm woken every morning at 4:30. Actually, I usually wake up at 4. But at 4:30, there's the call to prayer every day, the azan. And my day is divided by the 5 calls to prayer during the day. I see the world in a different way. Most of my colleagues are Muslims, very devout Muslims that stop and pray 5 times a day. It's a very different world. And living in Indonesia has taught me so much. I think probably one reason I went there thinking it would be 3 to 6 years, and now it's 18 years and I have no intention of leaving. I'll be here for 6 months during interpretation assignment with the Presbyterian Church, and then I will be flying back on January 4th. So here I am, and things feel crooked, out of joint. I'm in this new place. I don't even know which is day and which is night. Some of you have experienced culture shock. It's 15 hours different over there. So today is already the middle of the night tonight over there. What a shock to come back to Berkeley. Changes can be good or they can be bad. But whether they are good or bad, they make things feel crooked. Seems quite unreal to me that Mark and Janet have left First Press. Seems like just yesterday Earl Palmer left. How can Mark be leaving now? That shows how time gets telescoped when you're away. Janet worked with me at New College, and I was together with Mark at Cambridge for a year. And now it feels like the structure that he gave the church has left. And who knows where things are going to go next? Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Nobody knows. God knows. But it's change. And it can make things feel crooked. Bob Dylan said, "He who is not busy being born is busy dying." We have to be being born if we don't want to die. The collapse of global financial markets is something I can hardly comprehend. Well, my IRAs have been reduced by about a third, but I didn't have very many, so it didn't hurt me too much. What is worse is some of our funding agencies at ICRS Jogja have withdrawn their scholarships because they don't have any money. Is that good for us? Maybe it's good for us to have less money. Everybody, most people in America have far more money than anybody else in the world. Maybe it's good for us, but it certainly feels crooked. It feels strange. And Barack Hussein Obama was elected president. Now that's a change. I must admit that this is a great relief to me. I even feel a little bit proud to be an American now. But it sure is different. It feels crooked. Indonesia, the largest Muslim country in the world, with more Muslims than the whole Middle East put together, was just getting used to thinking of the United States as a great white imperialist enemy of Islam. And then we elect a black president named Hussein. Confusing. Indonesians love Obama. You know, he actually learned his calm exterior from when he was a boy in Java. I don't know that, but that's... But it's strange. The future seems crooked. What will happen next? In this crooked world, the preacher says something startling. God makes things crooked, and we can't change that. In Ecclesiastes 7, there are three kinds of crookedness that I see in this passage. The first is that sorrow and mourning are better than laughter and joy, because he says sorrow will make you happy. That's rather unusual. Secondly, death and the end of a person's life is more important than birth and its beginnings. In verse 2 to 4. No, that's in verse 1 to 2 and verse 8. And then thirdly, God is the author of both joy and sorrow. Both are appropriate in their time, and we cannot control our past or our future. Verse 10 and verse 14. The first crookedness is neatly summed up in verse 3. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sorrow of countenance the heart is made glad. This feels very unmodern, very crooked. Why should we go to the house of mourning? One reason is because bad things happen and they ought to be mourned. During the 11 years since the fall of President Suharto in Indonesia, many sad things have happened in that beautiful country. Ethnic and religious mass violence, tsunamis, earthquakes, corruption, political injustice, oppression, poverty, and terrible environmental destruction. When we deny our own sorrow, if we deny our own sorrow, the causes of the sorrow do not disappear. Rather, we lose touch with reality and we live in a fantasy world that it can hardly sustain a superficial happiness. We say peace, peace, when there is no peace. In contrast, when we acknowledge our sorrow, we say, I'm sad. Then we open the way to real comfort. Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. If you do not mourn, you cannot be comforted. You just repress it, and you cannot receive comfort. Mourning is not easy, and comfort is not instantaneous. It takes time, and it takes courage, and it takes patience. In verse 8, it says, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Pride refuses to experience the weakness of mourning, but patience is ready for the comfort that will come with time. About 15 years ago, I came back to Berkeley because my father died. And I was walking with a very wise and dear friend, and he said to me, how are you doing, Bernie? And I replied to him, I said, I'm really sad. I'm very, very sad. So sad. And he said, is it a good sadness? I've been thinking about that ever since. Is it a good sadness? I said, I don't know. I don't know. He said, you can know. You can know. There is a good sadness. There is a good mourning. There is a good grief. Never a pleasant grief or a pleasant sadness. But it's different from superficial sadness that may be very close to self-pity. Sadness is not always good. But Paul tells us that tribulation, borne with patience, brings experience. And experience brings hope. And hope is what gives us the courage to face tragedy and struggle against sin and injustice in the knowledge that God does not change. God is there with us. In the crooked lines of God, death is a prerequisite to resurrection. We cannot experience Easter without first experiencing the cross. The second crookedness is that in the day of death, that the day of death is better than the day of birth. That's in verse 1. And the end of things is better than its beginning, in verse 8. In the West, we have a culture of youth. Youth is wonderful and old age is terrible. Birth is a cause of rejoicing and death, a cause of embarrassment. Sadness that must be gotten over as quickly as possible. How in the world can the preacher say that death is better than birth? That is certainly crooked. In Indonesia, it's different. Old people are highly revered, and death is a time of solidarity. Somebody dies, everybody quits, they don't go to work, they all go to the house of the person who died. And for a week, all the neighbors gather at that house so that the person's never alone. For a week. And death becomes a time of building communal solidarity together. The first clue in this passage to why the day of death is better than the day of birth is in the first part of verse 1. A good name is better than precious ointment. And the day of death than the day of birth. A good name at birth is just a hope. But a good name at death is a reality. A good name is a summary of who a person is, of their identity. Only at death are we given the white stone that tells us our true name. The name written on the stone that no one knows except the person who receives it. Only God knows our true name because He knows what has happened through our life from the beginning until the end. The meaning of our life is revealed at the end, not at the beginning. During a person's life, their name or their identity is in flux. It's changing. I remember many years ago I was talking with my friend Jim Sire at New College, and we were talking about all the mistakes our parents made in raising us. And after we talked, really trashed them for a while, I said, "But you know, my parents couldn't be all that bad because I turned out all right." And Jim looked at me with his trademark twinkle in his eye and he said, "So far, so far." So far. Our life is changing, and how we turn out will only be known on that day when God gives us that white stone. History is full of the stories of great men and women who began well, but ended in disgrace and ignominy. Remember, before my father died, he said to me, "I am so afraid that I will not finish well." I said, "Why?" He said, "I have known so many good men and women who have finished so badly." It wasn't an idle fear. Life changes. Verse 7 says that oppression makes the wise man foolish, and a bribe corrupts the mind. Just because a person is wise and good does not mean they cannot be corrupted. On the other hand, someone who is evil and foolish can become wise and good. That is the meaning of grace. The grace of God that changes ourselves, our lives. If your life has been difficult and painful, give thanks. It could very well be that that is a better path to wisdom and to goodness than a life that's full of success. In the crooked lines of God, Death is the goal of life, not birth. Why? Because beyond death is the resurrection and new life that will bring the meaning of our identity to its fullness. The third crookedness reminds us, warns us against the danger of thinking that we can control or master our past and our future. God has made or allowed prosperity and happiness, as well as adversity and sorrow. Verse 10 warns against nostalgia for the good old days. There's a kind of thinking that refuses to face the present reality because of disappointment that it is not what we expected. Youth is full of hopes and dreams. Difficulties of the present can be borne because of hope for an idealized future. After I graduate, after I marry, after I get a good job, after I retire, after this or after that, then everything will be nice. I'll be happy. But after you are older and have succeeded or failed to achieve what you aimed for, it's easier to idealize the time before when you were full of hope. Now you're cynical. Similarly, now that the collapse of financial markets and institutions has created so much uncertainty and hardship, there's a temptation to idealize the past. If we could only return to the good old days before the markets collapsed and we were wealthy. Well, back then we didn't feel wealthy either. It's just a lying vision, just like the visions that we see on TV. I've watched TV for the first time in a long time in America the last couple of days while I've been trying to figure out, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and go and watch TV. And I just can't believe the lies that are on TV. I'm just astounded. How can they say these things to you all the time? I think one of the greatest challenges we have is to tell a true story about what's going on in our lives, to tell a true story of our past. Verse 14 tells us that we should be joyful in good times and accept the hard times as also coming from God. The first part, being joyful in good times, is harder than it looks. Because if we idealize either the past or the future, then we wouldn't recognize a good time if it came up and bit us in the face. We're so busy thinking about the past or the future that we can't realize how good it is right now. Be joyful in the good times. The second part of the verse tells us that there will be hard times, very hard times. The people we love will die. There will be betrayal and sickness and tears. There will be injustice and violence and corruption. Good people suffer, and we don't know why. It's part of the crooked lines of God. The preacher said that these times are also created by God and should lead us to consider. Consider what? That God made the good times as well as the bad times. Some people seem to have been dealt a wonderful hand and have a very easy and lovely life. Others seem to have terrible luck. We don't know why, and we don't know when our own fate will change. But we do know that it will change. What does not change is God. God does not change. God's love is always there for us. God makes good times and bad, birth and death, joy and sorrow, tragedy and triumph. If we know that sorrow lies ahead, it ought to lead us to enjoy and rejoice in the good times we have today. Right now, Indonesia is rejoicing in new freedoms, new opportunities. They've just finished an election and elected what I think is a good president. It's a flourishing democracy, and many of the bad times seem to be in the past. On the other hand, if we know that there is change, that knowledge, that wisdom, gives protection against despair in times of sorrow, times of adversity. We know that this too shall pass. Some of you are now feeling grief and perhaps despair. But be patient. Patience, says the preacher, is better than joy. Even the worst of times will pass. In the mystery of the story of our lives, we do not know what will happen next. Verse 14 says, therefore a person cannot discover anything about their future. I don't know about you, but I love to plan my future. I make all kinds of plans. I make lists. I make scenarios. I list all the possible options and how I will respond, and it never turns out that way. It's always different. A lifetime of these exercises has led me to one conclusion, that whatever is going to happen, it's different from anything I've planned. I don't know if I just have a particularly interesting and unusual life, but certainly the preacher's words on this match my experience. I haven't stopped making plans. They are part of the journey of what takes me to unexpected places. But the plans I write are with straight lines, and God seems to write crookedly. In the crooked lines of God, both joy and sorrow are part of the script and come in unpredictable combinations. God can use what we most fear to bring what we long for the most. So, in conclusion, consider the work of God. Who can make straight what God has made crooked? Three kinds of crookedness. In the crooked lines of God, true mourning is often the path to joy, while those who go chasing after happiness find that it is forever elusive. Unless a seed falls into the ground and dies, it cannot bear fruit. Secondly, in the crooked lines of God, death is the goal of life. Because in death we complete the journey to become who we truly are. Death is the door to resurrection. Thirdly, in the crooked lines of God, there is darkness and light, pain and joy, failure and triumph. It is not always clear which of these things is the more valuable. We cannot make straight what God has made crooked. The crooked lines of our lives are not all of God's authorship. We also hold the pen, and our sins and our weaknesses are written into our stories. But our hope is in the one who lived out all the paradoxes to the full. For what is more crooked than the cross? By his wounds, we have been healed. By his death, we have been given life. God writes straight with crooked lines.